Okay, so what we're doing now, I'll share the screen. It's in Chumash Bamidbar, and it's chapter 15, Perek Tesvav, and it is Pasuk Lamed Beis, Pasuk 32. So the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vayihiyu b'nei Yisrael Bamidbar, and the Jewish people were in the desert. Okay, just keep all these are just clues. We know they were in the desert for 40 years, so it's not telling us that much, but it's when the Jewish people were in the desert. Vayimtzu ish, and they found a man. Okay, so there's some kind of man doing something. What was he doing? Mekoshesh eitzim. Good morning. He was gathering wood. That's the translation we're going to give initially, gathering wood. We don't know really, maybe there's other things. Gathering wood, b'yayim ha-Shabbos, on the day of Shabbos. Vayakrivu oysam ha-moitzim oysay, b'koshesh eitzim. So what did they do? Those who found him gathering the wood, what did they do with him? They brought him El Moshe Ve'el Aaron. They brought this man, we don't know who he is, as we said, and we don't know exactly what he's done, but he's done something wrong, obviously, on Shabbos. And they bring him to Moshe and to Aaron, Ve'el Kol Ha'eda, and to the entire congregation. So this obviously is something big that he's done that warrants, that makes everybody stop and want to know what's happening. What happens? And then what do they do? And this is fascinating because, you know, we've mentioned many times that in Torah, there's really not a concept of a jail, a prison, right? We don't have such a thing. There's no jails. But here we have an interesting thing. It says, what do they do with this man that was doing something wrong on Shabbos? Chana, yeah, we just started. So it's just a man doing something. We don't know. We're all wondering. Somebody's done something wrong on Shabbos. Now they take him to Moshe and Aaron and they place him, as they say, b'mishmar. So mishmar would be the equivalent of what, as they translate over here, in custody. Some form of prison, as we say, mishmar. It's like a place which is guarded. I think that's the word you would say, because shmira, lishmar, is to guard. So he's under watch, right? He's somewhere where they're guarding him. Why? Why are they doing that with him? Kilai, let's see, it's up there. Kilai pirash. Because it's not clear what should be done with him. They don't know what's supposed to happen to this person. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, and Hashem says to Moshe, first of all, the person has to get the death penalty, and then he tells him what form of death penalty, rogoim oisai, that he should be stoned, ba'avanim, with stones, kol ha'eda, the entire congregation, Michutz la'machane, outside of the camp. Okay, let's just go back a minute. As I said, these are very, very unclear psukim. We have so many questions. We don't know when it happens. We don't know who the person is. We don't even know exactly what he's done. And we don't... What? No, we don't. Exactly, Rona. We don't know his name. We just know a person. And it's known as the Mikoshesh. Because that's what it describes what he did. So this is fascinating. Let's see first what Rashi tells us. Oh, so that's one opinion. So let's see Rashi. Rashi won't identify him. Rashi is going to tell us a little bit about when it happens, because it's also not clear. It just says that they were in the desert, and we know they were in the desert for 40 years. Now, just to clarify something, do you remember we have just learned the story of the spies at length, right? So this comes very soon after that story. When does the story of the spies take place? Do you remember when in the desert? Okay, so just to clarify again, they left Egypt, and they get the Torah, and then they do the sin of the golden calf, that we know. So that's all within the first few months after leaving Mitzrayim. 2448, they leave Mitzrayim, and already in Tammuz, they do the golden calf, right? So like 3-4 months later. Then we have the whole process how they have to get forgiveness. Then they build the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and now we enter the second year in the desert. So they've been in the desert for a year. They set up the Mishkan, Pesach time, right? Pesach time. Then we have the Iyar. And then we have, in the month, as we know, Tisha B'Av, right? That's when the spies come back, right? They're sent out, but they spend 40 days. So that's already the second year. So it's almost a year and a half after they leave Mitzrayim. And right after that, maybe, that's where it's written in the Chumash. We're not sure if that's when this takes place, but if this is when it takes place, when it's put into the Chumash, it would be about a year and a half after they enter the desert. But let's see what Rashi says. Rashi has a different opinion. Rashi says like this. First of all, he says, if you look into Rashi Lamed Beis, V'yihiyu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, so the Jewish people were in the desert, v'yimtu, and they found this person doing this. So it says, b'gnuson shel Yisrael diber ha-kasuk. This pasuk is actually something very negative about the Jewish people. How come? Shelay shamru ela Shabbos rishayna. When they entered the desert, they only kept one Shabbos. That's all they managed to do. And already, u'bashniya, and on the second one, Bazeh v'chilala, this one came and desecrated. So according to Rashi, this is not in the where it should be, right? This is not in the Chumash where we would think it would be. This takes place right after they leave Egypt and enter the desert, perhaps even before they receive the Torah, right? In the month of Iyar, you would say, perhaps. Like just the beginning of Iyar, that's when it would be. Right after they cross the Yam Suf, and then they enter a place called Marah, and Hashem tells them there about keeping Shabbos. They keep one Shabbos, and already the second one, this person is desecrating Shabbos. That's where you have the famous thing, you know, this concept that it says that if the Jewish people would keep two Shabbosim, Mashiach would come, right? Because it's never happened. Because already here on the second one, person could have managed to keep. Okay, that's one opinion. This is Rashi's opinion. We'll see another opinion in a minute. But let's just see what Rashi tells us a little bit more. He gives us a drop of insight. We'll have to get in the Gemara to understand a little more. But he says, what was he found doing? So it says, Hamaitim Oisoi Mikoshesh, those who found him gathering. So now we have an interesting thing, because remember, he's breaking Shabbos in some form. And we know that on Shabbos, or really any mitzvah, in order for a person to get the full punishment, if you transgress, there's a few conditions that have to be met. I'm sure you know there's a concept in Torah that you have to be warned. If somebody wasn't warned, doesn't matter what they do, they cannot be punished. Also, they need two witnesses. That's how the Torah works. No circumstantial evidence in Torah. It's all with witnesses. So warned, two witnesses, right? And the warning has to be very, very clear. There's a lot of different guidelines about the warning. It has to be extremely clear. Person has to acknowledge. They have to understand what they've been taught. That's why we say also, even with us, a lot of the things we do wrong, we don't know better. So we're not really responsible when you don't know better. I mean, that's not an excuse, because you're meant to learn, of course, it's true. But unfortunately, circumstances have made it that people don't know. So if you don't know, you can't, you know, that's it. But let's see how he says. So what happens over here? Rashi tells us, Shehisru Bai, they warned him. So here he did get a warning. That's why it talks about the people bringing him. Which people brought him? The people who had warned him. And he says, look what it says. They warned him and he didn't desist from gathering. He kept on going. Af mishemitzauhu. Even after they had found him, v'hisru bai, and warned him. And now in Rashi Lamed Dalit, it says, kiloi feiresh maya aselai. What does it mean that they didn't know what to do with him? So he says, interesting thing. Lai hayu yoidim, they didn't know be'ezem misa. Remember in Torah, we won't go into it, that's all gory details, but we have in other places, there are four forms of the death penalty. There's stoning, as we're having here, and there's also strangulation, which is the more common one, chenek, and there's also the sayif, the sword, right? So, and there's the hanging. So here we're talking about, interesting, what form? Aval yoidim, but they did know that somebody who is mechalal Shabbos is subject to the death penalty. They just didn't know how. So that's why they had to wait to see what Hashem will tell them. And that's why he had to be, so to speak, guarded, if you want to say, put into this prison interim until they were told what they had to do with him. And then the last Rashi over here, V'yetziu Oisai, Mikam, from here we learn, Shebeis Haskila, that the place of stoning was chutz, was outside and distant from the court. Okay, just an interesting detail. I just want to show you something on the bottom. If you look on the bottom of the art scroll, he has a very nice thing. He says, first of all, why Rashi? So how does he get the information that he's getting? So I'll just show you. He says, the pasuk could have said they brought him, right? And then it would have been clear that it referred to those who found a man gathering wood. The fact that the pasuk says those who found him gathering wood brought him. Why does it say that? It's like repeating. Because we already said he gathered wood. Because that teaches us that he was still gathering wood after he was warned. That's how we learn that he had been warned and he still continued doing it. Also, let me just see what he says here. That, okay. Then on number two, it says the incident took place on the second Shabbos, as Rashi, that's Rashi's opinion, that the Jewish people spent in the Midbar. Even though, and we have a question, what the Torah hasn't been given yet, but we know that they had already been commanded to keep Shabbos, so therefore they are responsible. And that's why they put this man into custody. It indicates that they had been informed that desecration of Shabbos is punished by execution, but they had not been informed of the manner of execution. Okay, that's Rashi. So we don't have, still have, we're missing so much information. Tons and tons. So let's see a little bit more on your next page. Just show you a few. It's a very interesting story, this. Because we'll see, it's fascinating in the fact that, besides that it's so enigmatic in the Torah, there's so many beautiful lessons. We'll see in a minute what we learn from this. So he says, on the top of your next page, you have a Ramban. Because I just want to show you, this is the different opinion. There's always has to be, can't be just one way of looking at it. One opinion is Rashi, that it took place right after they entered the desert. But the Ramban says something else. He says on the top, Ulaparsha hazais, samach achareha inyan hamekoshim, which means that this parsha, what happens right afterwards is the story of the Mekoshesh that we're reading now. So what he's referring to is the fact that it's put in the Chumash after the story of the spies. Why? Ki hoya bizman hazeh achar maisa hamaraglim al derech hapshat. Must mean that simply we have to say that this is when it took place. The story took place after the story of the Meraglim, according to the Ramban. V'zeh tam, and this is the reason why the Pasuk stresses V'yihyu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, that the Jewish people were in the desert. What's the stress of the desert? Because you know what happened when they sinned by the Meraglim. What were they told? Ki b'hisacher sham ha'am b'gzeira haniskeres hoya ha'me'ura hazois hazeh. Because that's when they were told that they are going to stay in the desert for 40 years. That's where we get the emphasis of the word desert. That's where the desert was looming, right, for a long time ahead of them. And that's what the Pasuk is stressing. It happened when they were really in the desert, like when they knew that the desert was going to be quite a permanent, not a temporary existence. That's the opinion of the Ramban. Now, doesn't matter practically for us when it happened. But one thing is for sure, the fact that the Chumash puts it here, right, that's where it's placed in the Chumash, is significant, which means even if this took place a whole year before the story of the spies, the Chumash decided to put it right after the story of the spies, which means that spiritually it's connected. And that's what we have to understand. What's the connection? What does it have to do with the spies, this man who for some reason, we don't know exactly what he did yet, decided not to keep Shabbos. And we have to see that there's a very deep connection. So keep that in mind. Okay, let's understand who, first we're going to see, as we said, Rona, who is this person, right? We don't know. It doesn't say a name. Who is he? So let's see what the Gemara says. Look at the next one, the Talmud Bavli. That's where we're from Masechah Shabbos. You see it says, Daf Tzadik Vav, it says like this, Tanu Rabbanon. So first opinion, as you were saying, Riva, Mekoshesh Zeh Tzlafchot. You remember the famous story that we have later on with the woman, those five sisters who wanted a portion, that's all the way in the 40th year though, but doesn't matter. They wanted a portion in the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they said that their father died, right? Remember they said clearly, our father died, and what word did they use? Two words. They said, in his own sin, in the desert. The desert. Remember that word? And here we're using the word desert. So we say that's why we use the word desert to show us who is the person. It's that man, Slavchad. The daughters. He has very special daughters. But he did something in, but we're going to have to understand what he did.
Didn't he want to be an example of what can happen?
what could happen. So that's one opinion. That's right. That's what we'll see, Weaver. That's right. That's L'shem Shamayim. So let's see how he says. So he says, this is an opinion. So it says, this is Slavchad, because it says, Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, right? That the Jewish people were in the desert and they found this man. And later, when it talks about those women, those five sisters, what does it say? Avinu meis b'midbar, our father died in the desert. So we say, just like over there, Slavchad, right? That's who their father is. And also over here, it is also Tzlafchad, because it's the same word. And whose opinion is this? This is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. I'll show you something very interesting. And the Gemara sometimes lets us in, not only to the opinions, but to the conversation that took place. So when Rabbi Akiva said this, he wasn't greeted by everybody with a very happy disposition. They weren't happy with what he did. Why? Let's see what he says. Amar la Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseira. So one of his colleagues, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseira, said to him, and he was very upset. He said, Akiva, bein kach u bein kach, ata asid litein es hadin. Whichever way you look at it, whatever perspective you have, you're doing something really wrong, and you're going to be held accountable. What does he mean? How dare you identify the one who did this sin? Why? What's Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira's idea? He says like this: Im kidvarecha, if you're taka right and this is slavchad, well then listen, hatayra kisesai. The Torah chose to hide it. The Torah didn't identify him. How dare you identify him? Why are you identifying him? Obviously, the Torah doesn't want to tell us who it is. He says, "Ata megala isai." And if not, maybe you're making a mistake, and it's not slavchad. Well, then that's even worse. then you're causing a libel on somebody. You're saying something wrong about slavchad, that he did something that he didn't do. Now, it's true that slavchad definitely did something to cause him to die, because that's even his daughters say that. But maybe it wasn't this sin, and we'll see which sin it might have been that's less severe than this sin. So he says like this: That means that you are making a stigma on a righteous man. And it's an interesting thing. Why is Rabbi Akiva, not only why, but how does Rabbi Akiva derive the fact that it's Slavchad? He's because of the same word used, right? And you know, in the Torah, that's one form that we can actually derive something. It's called Gzeira Shava. When you see the same word used in one context and the same word used in a different context, means it's connected. But he says, no, Gzeira Shava is not something that we should use in order to actually find out a fact. That's what he says, and especially this type of a disparaging fact shouldn't have been applied. It's not something that we can be certain about. That's what Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira says to Rabbi Akiva. Ella meheicha hava. So according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, what taka happened to Tzlafchad? Why did he die? What was his sin? And he says, meveya'afilu hava. Do you remember we just read about those people? They went, remember when Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, you can't go into the land of Israel, you're going to spend 40 years. A bunch of them didn't accept it. And they ran up the hill and they said, we're going anyway, right? They all died there. They were so eager to enter the land that they couldn't accept that they wouldn't enter the land. In a way, that makes sense because that he loved Eretz Yisrael. That's why his daughters loved Eretz Yisrael. He gave it to them, that love of the land, that he couldn't wait. And therefore, at the end of 40 years, when his daughters were about to enter the land, they couldn't accept that they wouldn't have a portion in the land of Israel. So that sin, in a way, fits more with who he was in a certain way. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira says. No, he must have been one of those, and it's also a less severe sin than breaking Shabbos, which gets this public stoning and doing so. Anyways, but the truth is, it's not just Rabbi Akiva's of the words. They said, interesting, the words they used was, our father died on his sin alone, like his own sin. This was a distinct sin that one man did, right? That's why it also makes sense, according to Rabbi Akiva, that it should be that it was Tzlafchad was the one who was the Mekoshe Sheitzin. It does make sense because, yes, and he does get stoned, unfortunately, but he does, yes, yes. Yeah, he does. Okay, but let's see. Anyway, yes. Okay, so he didn't, but his daughters did. That was the point. Their daughters, that was their claim. We didn't get there yet. Yes, we didn't get there yet, but he's gone. And that's what they're saying. They're saying it's not fair. Just because our father has died or been killed doesn't mean that we shouldn't also inherit. And that's when they, and they do get, they get an inheritance. We have a beautiful concept in Torah that children don't carry the sins of their fathers. So why should they? You know, why shouldn't they get their portion? And they do. But you see, they inherited the love of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, but let's understand anyways. That's so two opinions. But one opinion, so in other words, two opinions means either we don't know who it is when we're talking about the Mekayshesh, we actually don't know who, or it was actually Tzlafchot. Okay, let's go on now. Let's see, what did he do? That's also not so clear, because the word is Mekayshesh. So what does Mekayshesh mean? So we used the word to count, what did we say that he, what translation did we give initially? We said in the English, we said that he, what did the pasuk say? They're gathered, right? That was the word they used. Okay, because there's really three opinions. Let's see what sin he did. You know, on Shabbos, we have the 39 melachos, the 39 forbidden things. And it's one of three different ones that he could have been transgressing. Okay, let's see. Do you see on where it says, again, number three, there's a number three, Talmud Bavli. Do you see that there? What does it say there? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Shmuel. Mekayshesh means Maivir Arba Amos Bershus Harabim. He carried, so this is interesting, this is a different, still on that same page, more to the middle. He when it says what, like what did he do? So either he carried the, whatever it was, the pieces of wood in, as we say, the public domain. Right, on Shabbos you're not supposed to carry unless there's an Eruv in the public domain. And he carried, and the amount that you're not allowed is 4 cubits, 4 amis, then you transgress. And that's what he did. So that's one opinion. One opinion is that he carried in the public domain. Another opinion, it says, b'misnisa ahtana, so the Tana teaches us in a Braisa, that he cut the branches off a tree. And you know you're not allowed to cut branches off a tree on Shabbos. That comes from the Lamed Hesmelchos of Kaitzer. Kaitzer literally is plowing. But plowing means any type of uprooting from the ground, like turning over the ground. And one of the derivatives is that we don't uproot a tree. And he was uprooting, he was taking off the branches from a tree, cutting off branches from a tree, which is not permissible on Shabbos also. Or the third opinion. What?
Trees in the desert that you can
That is such a phenomenal question, Riva. Just keep it for 1 second, because the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks the same question. And I have to tell you that I didn't even think of that question. And I looked at it and I thought, why didn't I think of that question? After I looked at the Aruch Chaim, I thought, how could I have not? Thank you, Riva. We'll get to it in a second. Where's trees growing? Okay. So let's see number three. No, and then I will get right away to the Aruch Chaim. Rav Acha b'Rabbi Yaakov Amar Ma'amer Hava. What is Ma'amer? Ma'amer means to gather. Now that's also an interesting one. That's the, what's called Ma'amer, this one of the Lamed Hes Melachos. And usually it's talked, because with the 39 Melachos has to do with making bread, the first 11. So everything involved from the growing process until the actual making of the flour and the baking of the bread, right? So one of the things they do with wheat stalks in the field is that after you've cut them, right, you have to gather them together and make bundles. So gathering and making bundles on Shabbos of wood is definitely not permissible, right? And that's what he was doing, one opinion. Okay, but now we're going to get to why these are significant in a minute, but let's deal with Riva's question. So let's see what the Aruch Chaim says. So if you go down to the bottom of the page, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, he says two, I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, because I do want to get to the whole concept today, I make sure. So he says like this, I'll read a little bit. I'm going to read the part that you asked. First, I'll read one other part, and then we'll get to your question. He says like this. In the beginning, he says, Kasha, it's difficult. Ma baha kasav lashmi enu. Why is the pasuk emphasizing Shehayu Yisrael Bamidbar, that the Jewish people were in the desert? So we have an interesting thing. He says, and it's explained, V'yisbar al pi masha amru b'mesechah Shabbos, v'zel l'shayin, right? Amar av Yehuda, Amar av Shmuel, Amar Shmuel, sorry, Mekayshesh. So one of the opinions, as we just read, what is the Mekayshesh that he carried 4 amos in the desert? Or they say that he... So now we have a big question. So there's one question if there's trees, but there's another question. This takes a little bit more understanding of Hilchos Shabbos. When we talk about carrying, the only way that you transgress in order to need stoning, I mean, which means the real form of transgression, is if it's what we call a Rishus HaRabim. This is where a lot of Erev debate comes in. But what is a Rishus Harabim? Literally, we just translate it as a public domain. A public domain doesn't just mean going outside. A public domain, according to the Torah, is a place that has 600,000 people going through it every single day. And it has to have a certain measurement. That's right. You think, where would that be possible? I'll tell you what, if you go into Manhattan, it's definitely possible. And even according to some opinions, some of the main highways would have that. That's why you cannot make, you wouldn't be able to make an Eruv from here to the Blue Mountains, because you'd have the highway in the middle. It's not possible. So there are, Eruv can only be made where there isn't a Rishus Harabim according to the Torah. Because you can't make an Eruv, that's a whole different discussion, but where an Eruv takes, you know, it's called a Carmelis, which is an in-between space, which is not a really a public domain, strictly speaking, from the Torah. But the rabbis instituted that it's similar, so we don't carry there. That's outside of our own private domain. But we can make an Eruv and then be permitted. But to come back here, the place that is considered a Rishus Harabim would be a place that you have a lot of people frequenting. So the question is asked, a desert is not usually a Rishus Harabim, because there's not people in the desert, right? So the Aruch Chaim says that's why the Pasuk says the Jewish people were in the desert. When the Jewish people were in the desert, it became transformed to a place, a status of Rishus Harabim, even though usually it might not have been. So that's one interesting thing. But now we come to Riva's big question. So let's look on the second column over there. Do you see in the second column it says, Lama Hutzrach Hakosuv Loimar V'yiyu B'nei Yisrael B'midbar, right? Why does it emphasize that it says that the Jewish people were in the desert? We know they're in the desert. Why does it have to tell us that? Because it's going to answer the question. So he says, V'yisbar al pi masha amru oid sham. What does it say there? It says, as we said, that another opinion is not that he was carrying, rather that he uprooted, that he cut off branches. Okay. V'letzad, she's kasha l'divayatana. What becomes difficult according to this opinion? V'haloy amru rabbi seinu b'dine kisoydam chayev oif ein mechasin ba'ofer hamidbar. When we come to certain halachas of karbonis, you know, there's a concept of covering the blood of the animal with dirt. That's what it says. But you don't cover it with the dirt from the desert. And why is that? Because what do we know about the dirt from the desert? Shehi melecha, that it's very salty. Ve'eina mitzameches. Nothing can grow there, right? It's not conducive for growth. And we want to use earth that's conducive for growth. But how does that apply here? Which means nothing grows in the desert, as you said. So where does he uprooting trees from in the desert? So he says, in kein minayin yatsu tzmachin bamidbar, where does growth come in the desert, Shatolsha Mekoshesh, that this Mekoshesh should have uprooted. Lazahikdim, so that's why, how does it begin the story? V'yu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, the Jewish people were in the desert, and remember what happened, v'amru, zal, the rabbis teach us, Shebe'era shel Miriam, haya mashke, right, what's the famous thing we know? They had miraculous existence there, it wasn't a desert, right? The well of Miriam caused irrigation, right? Remember we said a beautiful thing. Exactly, right? And it went offshoot. It's amazing. It became like, it was like a tributary. It actually, as we know, there was lots of streams coming out. And the Medrash describes very, very beautifully. It says that what happened was that when they were traveling in the desert, there was Ganais Upardesian. There was even like trees and things growing and flowers. It was a beautiful existence. They didn't travel in a dry, arid, horrible desert. They traveled in the most beautiful of circumstances, 5-star luxury in the most beautiful way. Lahavdil, like they do in Dubai, right? Where they make out of the desert, Lahavdil. But the Eibishter made real miracles. There was real trees growing. That's why it says the Jewish people were in the desert. Miraculous Jewish people who were miraculously existing in the desert with the Be'er of Miriam, and that's why we could have this opinion. Okay, so now we know a little bit, but still, what's the meaning of all this? And what's he really doing? So let's go a little bit further. We'll get a little bit more. So let's see, now we're going to do a few things that is going to make us even, this one will be, we're going to do the Rabbeinu Bachaye, but we're not going to understand it yet. I'll just read it to you quickly. And just to see an interesting insight, and we'll explain it soon. So just I'm telling you, it's not clear. But just see. The Rabbeinu V'chai, we know, he explains beautifully. It's also in the 1200s. And he has a very nice format that he does. Many times he gives us pshat, then remez, then drush, and even sayd. So in other words, he goes through all the layers till the secrets, even like almost like the Kabbalah part. So he goes to the depths of understanding, the deepest parts, the deepest angles and perspectives. But we need a bit of explanation on it. So let's see what he says first. And he says, Rabbeinu B'chaya says, Hiksha aloshen mekayshesh. And what is it? Milaket. Why does it use the word mekayshesh? If he gathered, it should have used the word milaket. Likut is actually more the usual word for gathering. Leket is to gather. A yalkut is a notebook which you gather information. So leket is to gather. Why does he say mekayshesh? So he says because the word mekayshesh hints to something deeper. What, you have to break up the word and you have to make it sheroimez mikav shesh. Kav shesh means separate six. Separating six. What's he separating? Shehifrid beinyan shisha ktzavais helyainim. He separated between the six sides, the higher sides. What do you say over here? They translate supernal extremes. I'll tell you in a minute. Shehem ashisha midas helyainis, the six higher midas. Now, just on a simple level, just tell you something very, keep it simpler. We know, we can even do it corresponding to the days of the week. We have 6 days of the week, and then we have the seventh. And we know that in nature, everything has six sides, right? The cube has six sides, because that's nature, right? That's how Hashem made the world. Even something flat really has six sides, in a sense, really, right? Everything that is physical, anything that is six. And holiness, we always say, is symbolized by the number seven. Comes Shabbos and inserts the seven. So he says the word, and we'll have to understand what we mean by this, but Mekayshesh seems to be that this man, for some reason, has an agenda where he wants to differentiate, make a very big distinction, not only differentiate and distinction, but he wants to actually isolate the six from the seven. We'll understand in a minute what that means, but I'll show you. And he brings an example also that Moshe Rabbeinu Boishesh, also the word that he came down late. Do you remember it says when he came down by the sin of the golden calf, and it meant sixth hour. So again, the word Boishesh, Mekayshesh, has the word Shesh in its six. Okay, we'll have to understand what he's talking. Let's look at the Zayar, even more difficult, but we'll, and then we'll explain it all. So it says in the Zayar, I'll just read you in the English, Rabbi Chiya said, because Zayar is in Aramaic, they found a man gathering trees on Shabbos. So what are these trees that he's gathering? So the Zayar says, we did in Tillim last week, we did it on the Tuesday night, we did something which is alluding to this. When we talked on Shabbos, we mentioned this actually, the concept of Atzei, right? The two trees. What are the two famous trees that we have? So he says, what are the trees and who is the man? The man is Tzlafcha, that's what the Zayar says. He identifies, obviously, according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And he was inquiring about the trees. Which trees? The Eitz Hadas and the Eitz HaChayim, the two famous trees that we have in Gan Eden. We have two trees in Gan Eden, one known as the Eitz HaChayim and one known as the Eitz Hadas. Remember, Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, right? Then he started to know. We know what happened to him when he ate from the Eitz Hadas. All of a sudden, he starts to struggle. We all say we wish he didn't eat from the Eitz Hadas, because before he ate from the Eitz Hadas, everything was very clear. It's not that there wasn't any negativity in the world, but it was black or white. It was clear. What was good, what was negative was negative. When he ate from the Eitz Hadas, things started to become a little bit more unclear, and we have a big struggle now. That's what our life is all about. Now, till now, we're still differentiating and figuring out what's really good, what's not good, and what needs to be taken out, so to speak, what needs to be selected out and what needs to be kept in, if you want to say. So this is the, let's see how the Zayar says, and we'll discuss and understand what's going on here. So he says, the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, which one is greater than the other? And we'll see what they each symbolize and why he has this question. And he was not cautious for the glory of his master. He exchanged one Shabbos for another Shabbos. And it says that Friday night corresponds to the tree of knowledge, and Shabbos day corresponds to the tree of life. That's what it says. And he was emphasizing more the tree of knowledge. We'll see in a minute what that means. This is what is written, Bechetai, in his own sin. What is Bechetai? In the sin again of Vav. Do you see? The six. We have to understand what the six is, as we had before. He died in the sin of six, did he die? Okay, so let's discuss and understand what's going on here. Okay, it's all very... So just on... Well, it's not actually as... You can go very deep, and you don't even have to go so deep to understand. We said that it was put into the Chumash after the sin of the spies. That means it's definitely connected, whenever it happened. We know what was really the sin of the spies. What did the spies want? Why didn't they want to go into the land of Israel? What were they afraid of? They were afraid of facing the real life, if you want to say, if you want to put it simply, right? They were afraid of having to plow and to plant, to deal with all the materialism, to deal with the day-to-day difficulties of what the 6 days of the week present to us. They loved their life in the desert. Life in the desert was magnificent, as we see. It was as perfect as could be. The mun fell, the water, the Miriam, as we see, gardens grew, but spiritually it was amazing. It was just amazing because they didn't have to worry about making a parnassa, right? So, wow, amazing. You don't have to go to work. You can sit and learn a whole day. And they had the best teacher in the world. Which teacher? You would never exchange Moshe Rabbeinu for any other teacher. What could be better? Not only that, but the clouds of glory, which means that they had a revelation of godliness. They were living the perfect life. Who wants to give up on that? Nobody. None of us. They were literally in Gan Eden. So they didn't want to go to the land of Israel. But we know that Hashem was really telling them, and this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to tell them, that's a mistake. It's all wonderful and beautiful. And we know, as we always say, Shabbos is one day and the week is 6 days. Shabbos is wonderful and beautiful. And as we all know, we don't want to leave Shabbos. It's true. But we don't have a choice. And what's the purpose of creation? The purpose is the 6 days. But, okay, you need Shabbos. Of course, Shabbos is magnificent. But the purpose is the 6 days. So now, after they made that mistake, and then they were punished to be 40 years in the desert, comes this man, this Mekosha Sheitzin, and sorry, I'm just going to make a little parenthesis, because very important what you mentioned before, Riva, I just forgot to tell you something important, that many opinions hold that he wasn't a bad man, that the reason he broke Shabbos was actually to teach everybody, because he said like this, now they're going to be in the desert for 40 years, and what's going to happen is people will think, well, since we're in the desert, we don't have to keep Shabbos, so he wanted to show them what happens if you don't, so he made an example of himself. That was his intention. Obviously, that's not the right thing to do. We don't teach people by doing the wrong thing. That's not the Torah review. But nevertheless, he meant well. Okay. But coming back to what we're saying, he sees the mistake that the spies had, and he goes to the other extreme. So now he says like this, oh, so if the whole purpose of creation is the weekday, if the whole purpose of creation is the working in the physical realm, well, then I want to make a separation. I want 6 days to be the main thing, and the seventh day, maybe I'll experience Shabbos, maybe not. As you see, he broke Shabbos, right? I don't know if I really want to experience Shabbos in that holy way, because the main thing is the 6 days. So he detaches himself totally from the spiritual. It doesn't work that way. If you don't have Shabbos, you're not going to have 6 days. There's no way possible. We know we do that every day. If you don't daven in the morning, forget about it. The day will become mundane totally. You won't have the strength of the Eibishter to go through the day. And you won't be able to differentiate between what's positive and what's negative, what's holy and what's not holy. So he's making a massive mistake. He's going to the other extreme. And actually, in all the different opinions, you can see it. When we talk about carrying in the Rishus HaRabim, so what did he think? Rishus HaRabim means the public domain, and also the word Rabim comes from what's a public domain, as we said, a lot of people. That's a place of divisiveness, of where everything is separate, everything is fragmented. He thought that's the ideal. The ideal is to live in that realm. Now that's fine, you do live in that realm. But when it comes to Shabbos, you don't carry in that realm. You have to actually, believe it or not, divorce yourself from that realm. That realm has to not exist. You don't go in the Rishus HaRabim. If you do, you run through it quickly. You're not carrying all your things through it, right? You go quickly, because where do you find yourself on Shabbos? In the shul, in the home, right? That's where you're supposed to be on Shabbos, with your family, not out in the workplace, not out on the streets. That's not where we are on Shabbos. We don't carry our things on Shabbos. That shows one mistake. Then the other one even shows more, because he's uprooting. What does uprooting a tree mean? When a tree is in the ground, it is aware of where its roots are, right? Where its life force is. That's what a tree in the ground is. A branch which is attached to a tree can never ever feel that it is detached from its life force and cannot feel that it's an independent being. He was uprooting. What was he doing? He was separating. He was almost as if he was saying that I can exist in the 6 days without the seventh day. I'm strong enough to face the world without my spiritual recharge. I'll remember God. It's not that he wasn't going to do mitzvahs, but he thinks he doesn't need a spiritual recharge. Doesn't work that way. Because if a person doesn't set aside time to be purely connected to Hashem and shut everything else out, it's not going to work. So you see, that's why he's uprooting. He's detaching himself from the life force. And the third one, what did we say that he made? What was that one? There was another opinion where he made the bundles, right? That was also, again, he thinks that on Shabbos, on that day when you're supposed to be separate, he thinks you can take, again, this fragmentation, all the different things, like it's like, you know, in life you're facing a lot of challenges and all the different things that we have to think about. That's what during the week is. That's why we're so stressed during the week, because we're going in 100 different directions. Shabbos is a day of oneness. That's what Shabbos is. That's the beauty of Shabbos, right? Shabbos is a day where we feel more at peace, more secure. We're devoted to one thing, to Hashem, and it's all about holiness, right? We're not thinking about and we're not meant to be thinking about all the 100,000 things that we have to do during the week. He thought, no, I'm going to bring my weekday into Shabbos. I'm going to gather, even on Shabbos, I'm going to be able to gather. No, Shabbos, we don't do gathering. Shabbos, we stay in one place with one focus, and we don't worry about the week. And there's actually a very beautiful story that's told in the Gemara somewhere else that's tied in. Fascinating thing that's later on tied in according to the Arizal. There's a story that we hear a lot of times, you know, that we talk about Shabbos being a day that you don't do certain things, but not only don't you do, you remember on Shabbos, you're not even supposed to think about the things you have to do, right? That's the hardest thing. So you remember this famous story about this man, he was actually a very righteous man, and as he's leaving his house, he notices that his fence is broken. So what does he think, as we would all do? He's not going to fix it on Shabbos, but he thinks after Shabbos, I'll remember to call the repairman to get it fixed because of the breach in the fence. As soon as he does that, he thinks, oy vavoy, what did I do? How could I have thought on Shabbos and made plans to do something that's forbidden to do on the Shabbos? So he decides, he resolves that he's not going to fix the fence. He's going to leave it broken because he shouldn't have thought about it on Shabbos, and therefore he's going to leave it broken. It's a very fascinating thing it says, that because he was such a righteous man, and really he didn't mean bad, Hashem took care of it for him. And what did Hashem do? He made a certain tree grow there that would actually be a block, so it was part of the fence. In other words, his house wasn't open. It wasn't that there was a breach. Now there was this bush that grew. And what's the name of the bush? The name of the tree, it's called a tzlaf tree. That's what it's called. In the Gemara it says, it's a tzlaf tree. So the Arizal explains, because the Arizal knows the, you know, how the neshamis work. And he says, who was this righteous man? He was a Gilgal of Tzlafchat, of this Mekoshesh Eitzim. Okay, so what happens? This guy, he breaks Shabbos, right? This is in our story, he's breaking Shabbos. He's doing on Shabbos what you're not meant to do. In other words, he's bringing the weekday into Shabbos. So this man, who was a Gilgal, and right away when he thought about it, he didn't do anything even, he just thought. He said, oh my gosh, I'm definitely not going to implement it. So what does Hashem do? He shows him that, don't worry, you're forgiven. And he makes a tzlaf tree representing tzlafchad, that you are okay because you've done tshuva. Your tshuva is accepted. You realize your mistake, and you didn't build, and I will make this tzlaf tree there. So it always reminds you that you have been forgiven. And retroactively, he is doing tshuva for what tzlafcha did. Why in this context? Because you can see the separation between Shabbos and the weekday has to be so strong, meaning that Shabbos has such an important value as a Jew, as we know. And we have to treasure Shabbos. And we have to treasure the holiness of Shabbos. And that's represented by the Eitz HaChaim. The Eitz HaChaim means where it's life, where it's alive, where you see godliness in a revealed way. The Eitz HaDas is where things are confused. That's the weekday. Of course it's important. We have to deal with the weekday. And we have to find and reveal, as we all mentioned one time, about the sparks of holiness that are spread out during the week. We have to look for them and we have to elevate. And of course, that's very important. A Jew doesn't live like those people in, where do they live in the mountains? And they, you know, they sort of isolate themselves from the world. That's not the Jewish approach. Of course not. We don't do that. But once a week we do. That's what people don't realize. So we're not like the Christians and we're not like the people who don't have any belief. We have a beautiful balance. There's this incredible balance that we have, that there is Shabbos, this holiness, and it's sacred and has to be respected and held cherished. And yet, obviously, the goal is that the weekday should become holy and sanctified. And this is, so this guy went to the other extreme of the Meraglim. So you see what it shows us is we have to go in the middle. And that's the idea, as we said, Mikoshesh, that he's breaking apart the six. He thinks that the 6 days of the week can be kept without Shabbos. It's not going to work. Definitely won't work. And also, that's why he's stoned. The word Even is Aleph and then Beis Nun. In Hebrew, Beis Nun is 52. That's the gematria. And it's the same gematria as the word behema, animal. What does behema symbolize in this context? Behema, we know we all have the animal soul. That symbolizes the part of the world that doesn't acknowledge who created it, right? That's where it's a bit confusing, in the animal part. That's where emotions run wild. Animals are very emotional. That's saying in a negative way. Animals are also creations of it, but so what it symbolizes. That's the part of us where we have to be very careful. That's the weekday. That's where the animal reigns supreme, right? What do we do, Evan? Aleph. We have to take the God and put it into the behema. You cannot live in the behema world without God there. So you need that one day of the week, the oneness of Hashem, to come into it. That's what the Evan represents. If you don't have it, if you detach it, then you can become hard like a stone. And then you become unfeeling, and then you don't know why you're here. And then your weekday is detached, and you don't accomplish what you have to. So this is the story of the Mekoshesh Eitzim in a spiritual sense. But the lesson is beautiful for us. We're very lucky. We're so lucky, I have to say. We get to have the recharge every week, and that's beautiful. But we also have to remember that the goal is to take it into the 6 days. So even weeks shouldn't make a separation. Some people think there's also a different way of doing it. Shabbos, I'll be holy, and that's fine. But during the week, I'll just do my mundane things, and I'll just, you know, but I'll keep Shabbos properly, but it doesn't work that way. There's no separation. They both exist to help each other, and they have to coexist. And we have to schlep the Shabbos into the week. Of course, we don't schlep the week into Shabbos. Okay, that's important. That's what he did. Can't do that. Doesn't work that way. But we definitely schlep the Shabbos into the week. And it's very, it then makes a beautiful week. And it lifts up, and then we're able to accomplish our goal. And then the two trees, as it explains Kabbalistically, that are in Gan Eden actually become one. That will happen when Mashiach will come. In other words, that even the Eitz HaDas, which seems confusing, will become like the Eitz HaChaim, which is pure life. In other words, even in the realms that don't look holy now, we'll be able to see how everything is created by Hashem, and everything can be sanctified. That will happen when Mashiach will come. So that's.